Blog Talk Radio.
To the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club with your host Charles Williams. Tonight's feature is Black Theology and Black Power by Dr. James Cone. And the topic is for tonight is the Black Bourgeoisie and White Liberals. And I'm joined by my lovely wife as my co-host. Say hello, Jalavette.
Hi, Charles.
Hey.
Hey. I flipped it.
I see. You just went out here and did it.
I just went out and did that.
All right.
I stepped out on faith.
Yes, you did. And you have... I was pressed down, shaking together and running, turning over.
Oh, my goodness. You are so funny. Oh, so, how are you this evening?
Oh, I'm very sleepy.
Not that we, you know, aren't in the same house, whatever. I just thought I'd ask you that.
Yes.
For the sake of the audience.
I know.
Well, you know, I'm tired too, but that's because we had kind of a busy day today. But I am excited about this particular topic. Now, I have to confess that I did not study on this particular topic like you did, but so I'm going to be listening along with everybody else who didn't study or didn't have their book to see what this particular topic is really going to unfold, because I am very interested in whenever you get to talking about the Black bourgeoisie and especially how they relate to the liberal white agenda. So,
yes,
I'm eager to hear that correlation.
Yeah, like he, Professor Cone doesn't, you know, he mentions the Black bourgeoisie in his book a few times and the Black theologians, but he doesn't stress their significance, and you know, he to the European colonial establishment. I'm sure he knows it's there, but you know, the thesis of the book was really Black theology and Black power, and so he didn't really want to, you know, go too far into that. I just wanted to emphasize it because I wanted to explore it for the sake of our discussion, because I love, you know, really getting into this hegemony strata of Black society or American society. And how it relates to white liberals and, you know, and their ability to gain, I would say, favoritism from the broad section of Black culture, Black society.
All right.
And so, you know, we open that up and just really kick that around a bit.
Okay.
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 Okay. And so
let's go.
So it's on, this section opens on page 26. This is only like one. You really have like one section really devoted to this in the first chapter. And he has another section on it called that kind of leads up to it. like, how does black power relate to white guilt?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of builds up to this crescendo of the black power and white liberal. And it's like the last, second to the last section of the book. I mean, of the first chapter, excuse me. And so we're going to sit here and focus on this because the first one we define black power, it's also from chapter one. And this discourse here that I'm that we're featuring is from the first chapter as well. But here he is on page 26 through 28. It's very short, and we'll open it up here. He says, in a time of war, men want to know who the enemy is, who is for me, and who is against me. That is the question.
Mm-hmm.
The assertion of black freedom in America has always meant war. When blacks retreat and accept their dehumanized place in white society, the conflict ceases. But when blacks rise up in freedom, whites show their racism.
Mm-hmm.
And so in reality, then, accommodation or protest seems to be the only option open to the black man. For 300 years, he accommodated, thereby giving credence to his own enslavement. Black power means that he will no longer accommodate, that he will no longer tolerate white excuses for enslavement, that he will no longer be guided by the oppressor's understanding of justice, liberty, freedom, or the methods to be used in attaining them.
Mm-hmm.
That was a large mouthful. And, you know, that's what black power is. When you say, I'm not going to let these people tell me how I should go about, tell me what's excessive force, what types of actions are appropriate, what types are inappropriate. And the black bourgeoisie ties into it because those are the people who are in the black community, whether they claim to be part of, you know, of every strata, but they are tied to that colonial Anglo-American liberal faction that makes the pretense to interact or converse with the Negro for the benefit of the Negro.
Right.
They say, oh, man, I'm your friend, man. I'm trying to tell you, you know, you. I understand your pain, your anger, you know, you're all riled up there. But, buddy, you know, I'm just trying to hear him here to help you.
We're all goddamn Americans.
We're on a steady pace of freedom. Things are getting better. You know, you just need to just settle down a bit, and we'll figure out something here.
And if you colored would just understand. Anyway, you know what? Just listening to that part, just that portion that you just read. If I close my eyes and just listen, it sounds like Amos Wilson.
Yeah.
It sounds absolutely like that could have come from any of Amos's writings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, that I guess is it illustrates how very apparent, you know, what it is that we need to do to facilitate true black power.
Right.
You know, scholars agree 100%.
Right. All the scholars agree.
Right.
That we're not saying that there's one surefire method, but we do need, but the one method you can say that's sure is that you need to define things on your own.
Right.
You don't need to
can't defer to
the people from the other side that claim to be ambassadors to you. That's what I, you know what I'm saying? That's what the white liberal. I'm not talking about a white zealot. I don't consider a person like John Brown or Harriet Beecher Stowe a white liberal.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? These people, who they were like, no, this stuff is really bad. And some of them, I mean, they may, like, you know, Garrison, William Lloyd Garrison, was not not of the same caliber of person as John Brown.
Right. That is correct.
Even though they both are abolitionists.
Mm-hmm.
They both are Caucasian. One is like, no, America screwed up. America is really bad, and it's on a terribly despotic
collision course with hell.
And, right, in a covenant with hell. And the other one, Will Longaris, is like, well, you know, this slavery thing is, you know, too far, but, you know, other than that, we're doing pretty good, you know.
Right.
This, I mean, you got to learn how to distinguish people who are really detest the unrighteous. And the problem we see with the black community in our time is that we have lost sight of ourselves.
Yep.
We no longer know what's in our best interest, because a lot of us have fallen in love with the crumbs from the table. So, you know, say a person like John Brown come to the black man and say, hey, man, this is real script. You need to develop the type of relationship with your people to have a strong position against us. And black folks be like, get out of here, you crazy old white man.
Right.
See, you know, at that time, I'm not saying you didn't have people like that in the 19th century, but I'm saying you have more people like that in the 21st century.
Right.
And that's a problem. But we're not here to talk or compare 21st century to 19th century blacks. We're here to discuss the relationship between the black bourgeoisie and the white liberal. We're just trying to help people distinguish who is a white liberal, who is not a white liberal.
Right.
What made John Brown a serious, hardcore revolutionary, and William Lloyd Garrison was what we would call a softcore revolutionary.
Right.
You know. He just wanted to end slavery, and that's it.
Right.
You know, another one wanted to not only end slavery, but condemn.
Right, correct.
Condemn. There's another guy who also was like that. Randall Kennedy talked about him in his lecture on good white people. And this guy, he was the only legislator. He was a cabinet member. When he was cabinet, he ordered, he said, we should confiscate the plantations and pay the emancipated Negroes with the money. And they looked at him like he was crazy.
Right.
I forgot his name, though.
And there was someone else who was saying, I can't remember if it was an article that we had recently read. It was talking about the fact that the whole atrocity would bring the wrath, you know, upon them, and that they didn't want any part of it. They didn't want to be held accountable for you know, the Caucasian having to pay, you know, for these atrocities that they had committed against them.
Oh, that was I think you're talking about Harriet Stowe, Harriet Beecher.
Is that who it was? Okay.
Is she the one who was really trying to evangelize white people to stop doing these atrocities, because she knew they would, as a collective group, they were going to have to pay for those consequences.
Right.
And that's, you know, out of her love for her countrymen, she was an abolitionist, not out of his, her love for black people.
No, not at all. Right.
Right. She was revolutionary. She was like, hey, this is real bad. Y'all need to cut this out. This is, but, you know, you're bringing the sin on our head, and they're like, screw this.
Right.
You know. So we got to really look at these types of personalities very closely,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, benefit where we can, but, you know which side, you know, how far they really going and what, you know, reasons they may be doing it.
Right.
And, you know, but anyway, where was I? I'm looking on my page here. It says, he recognized the difference between theoretical equality and the great factual inequalities. This is in the liberal. So he knows, you know, in ways that I say only the black bourgeoisie member understands. You know, the black bourgeoisie is highly intelligent in a way that, you know, many of us in the, you know, the math are not. They have studied history, they study economics, you know, and they know how to sell out and look like they're not. And they know the same things that this particular is, they're just as savvy as the white liberal, in my opinion. So that's a white liberal, would not sit by and wait for the white man's love to be extended. I'm sorry, he's talking about black power here. He said he would not sit by and wait for the black white man's love to be extended to his black brother. He would protest violent if need be on behalf of absolute and immediate emancipation. Black power means that black people will cease trying to articulate rationally the political advantages and moral rightness of human freedom, since the dignity of man is a self-evident religious, philosophical, and political truth without which human community is impossible. So black power, man, you ain't going to waste all that time. using all your sophistry to try to appeal to the humanity of your oppressor slash enemy.
Correct.
You know, you just, you know, and explaining to him all of these great details of benefits that the oppressor himself will gain by ceasing to oppress you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, there are benefits to be gained. The oppressor is not interested in that, and to become powerful, you will not plead with him concerning this, because that's not functioning from a powerful standpoint. That's position yourself in a situation stance of weakness. You're the beggar, and that's the position that we, as a community of Black African people, place ourselves in when we go protesting, begging, and pleading, and lecturing at their universities, pleading with them to stop doing committing the crimes that they're committing.
Right.
Right.
Often have we said, what sense does it really make to go to, you know, a person who has wronged you and ask them to police themselves and to stop?
Right.
What sense does that make?
Right. And we have been, and that's the dominant course that we have been pursuing. We haven't, you know, put ourselves to the task, because that job is, we got to put to our own community to get our behinds in line to do what we need to do to make the things happen that we need to happen. And we have been too timid in pursuing that course, and so then we decided to just go walk hat in hand and just go beg them to just, you know, give us some more lenient mercy. You know,
right?
That's pathetic,
right?
And that's why we are pathetic. You know, that's real. But anyway, as he continues, he says, when one group breaks the covenant of truth and assumes an exclusive role in defining the basis of human relationship, that group plants the seeds of rebellion. So he's saying when a European does that, he's saying the only thing you really got to do is to disobey him and to usurp him. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
He just said that, you know, he is the moral authority. And the only way he cannot be the moral authority is to be shown that he is not the moral authority by demonstrating his moral impotence. Right?
Right.
Right. We know Arthur Paul, he said when the enemy shows himself in the battlefield, he makes himself vulnerable. Right.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he was functioning clandestine and in secret, he made himself invincible. But once he takes that stance, and I always say how white, you know, society is, so they have courage. Then they show up in public with their, you know, in battle array, they made themselves vulnerable. They showed who they are and exposed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I said, now it's up to our community at any point in time in history to have positioned ourselves to exploit that. We didn't do it, and so they succeeded. There you go.
All right.
Because, you know, we didn't understand, because we ignorant. We live on plantations. We serve them. So we don't understand a whole lot about warfare and the psychology of it.
Right.
Right. And we're still in that position now. Ain't nothing changed. But anyway, he goes on. He says, Black power means that blacks are prepared to accept the challenge and with it necessary of distinguishing friends from enemies. But when you're powerful, you know who your friends are.
Right.
Had Ken Blanchard on, Pastor Clint Blanchard on, who had an urban podcast,
mm-hmm.
podcast, Black Man with a Gun. He said, anybody coming to tell you to sit turning your guns for toys is not your friend.
Correct.
And, you know, most black people reject his message of black empowerment. He's saying, arm yourself so you can protect your wives and family. And people are like, oh, we ain't supposed to have guns. That's not our prerogative to protect. That's the police job to do that. Then you complain about the police shooting your wives and children on the street.
Right.
You know, that kind of ambivalent thought, you know, is just, that's the epitome of our of our ambivalence, our double-mindedness, our madness. That this guy, who's he's a black man, former federal police officer, he trains people. He's a professional trainer in special tactics and weapons, and he's telling you he works in lobbying about expanding, you know, gun rights for everybody, but specifically you.
Mm-hmm.
And our community say, we don't listen to this guy because we don't know how to distinguish friends from enemies. We think Bill Clinton is a black man. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we think, you know, a whole lot of crazy things about people who pretend to be our friends, because we really don't know anything. And the black community has never really acknowledged its own ignorance to itself and say, you know what, we pretty stupid. And that's what Neely Fuller told us. That's what Amos told us. We don't like to remember them people.
Yes, that's true.
No, as a community. I mean, you know, a few people of us, you know, remember kicking their names around and be like, yeah, he did say that. No, that was game. But most of the people, most black people, come on, most people ain't interested in hearing what they, you know, they don't want to hear that.
Right.
I don't want to hear that. And that's.
Let me tell you, I didn't want to hear it. I didn't like that. I mean, he said that. It took me some time to understand, you know, what he was saying. I didn't like that when he said that on the show. Black people are stupid. What?
Yeah, Amos said, he said, we have been, Harold Jacobs told you in 1850, he said, black people were made stupid by this business of slavery. She said that.
Right.
Nina told you 250 years later. Amos told you 160 years later. You know, it's a truth. It's, we don't get to hear it much.
Right.
But it's a fact of reality. And the only way you're going to be able to be made smarter or unstupid is to realize that you are stupid and stop doing and learn to, like you said, learn how to function from the position of power like this professor's telling you. You know, learn how to distinguish friends from enemies, for real. You have to really get up on your history. You have to understand a lot of things. You get on your disciplines of psychology and sociology and your spirituality and all of that so you can get wise. You get some knowledge, then get you some wisdom. Then, you know, and the knowledge, wisdom is about applied knowledge, properly applied knowledge. And there you go. And if you don't have no understanding of the knowledge that you have, possess, or gain, or exposed to, then, you know, there you go. You're going to get played.
Mm-hmm.
All up and down the game, and they can tell you anything. They can laugh in our faces, and we can just continue, you know, being the chumps that we are.
Whew.
And that's why this show is so popular. Because, whoa, man, everybody loves to hear.
Everybody loves to be reminded of that. Thanks, guy. Good looking out. Oh, man. Okay.
I'm going to skip a little quote here.
Mm-hmm.
The black bourgeoisie he mentions. He barely touches on it. He says, it's a pretty lengthy quote. He said, rebellion for the black man can only mean extermination, genocide. And moreover, fact one is that many poor blacks, being poor so long, have become accustomed to slavery, feeling that any form of black rebellion is useless. And fact two, that the black bourgeoisie, having tasted the richness of white society, do not want to jeopardize their place in the structure. Understand, this book was written before integration.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people that was kind of integrated was the black bourgeoisie.
Mm-hmm.
Had a little money. You know, they were able to, you know, create their own community and live, not necessarily integrated with the white man, but integrated with the white man in terms of culture. They could buy everything that the white man had, the white society had. They really tried to emulate, copy white people. They dressed like them. They, you know, thought like them, alienated themselves from Africa like them. You know, probably went on safaris too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Did the whole thing. So you fast forward this, you know, to our time where mainstream black society is living in a ideological integration like the black bourgeoisie was living at the time in the 1960s, at the time of the writing of this text. So you can say, you can even apply this and say black folks have tasted the richness of white society,
mm-hmm.
and do not want to jeopardize their place in the structure. So at the time of the writing, only the black bourgeoisie was acting like this, but now it has infected the whole of black society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's cancerous, basically.
Right.
It's, right. That's how far worse off we are today than we were in 68, 69.
Well, now I'm sad.
I should hope so. And then he doesn't let black theologians off the hook.
Good.
Because we talked about this when I had him on the African Conversations program. He went in on them pretty hard. He says black theologians have more often than not merely accepted the problems defined by the white theologians. Their treatment of Christianity has been shaped by the dominant ethos of the culture. There have been very few, if any, radical revolutionary approaches to the Christian gospel for oppressed blacks. There is then a need for a theology whose sole purpose is to emancipate the gospel from its whiteness so that blacks may be capable of making an honest self-affirmation through Christ. And then he goes on to say this work, this book right here, further seeks to be revolutionary in that the fact that I am black is my ultimate reality, my identity with blackness, and what it means for millions living in a white world controls the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the black theologians are just like the black bourgeoisie. Now I'm saying they're even synonymous. Because the black theologians are members of the black bourgeoisie. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they function as such. They just trying to live, you know, the white theologians, technically, they define all of the issues and the major things to be discussed, the quote-unquote end topics. And they just get in on it, too, and say, what did you get to say, buddy? Oh, I'm saying whatever he said, buddy. Mm-hmm. You just restate what Mouser just said. You know?
Right.
And James Cone was like, he got in there, he broke into the black theologian guild, and he just said, what the hell y'all talking about? You know, this is some bull crap. These are some of the real issues right here. And it took some time before, you know, they eventually started trying to get in on the, you know, other theologians try to get in on the black power. And so there was some issues with that, was when people got on board with him, and then you had militant integration, that sort of thing. But I'm gonna get back to the liberal whites more specifically, but I just wanted to show how the black bourgeoisie fits into the whole problem of submitting to the white power structure by being a ambassador. I would call them a translator.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the black bourgeois is they're our ambassador. They serve as translator to the European colonial oppressor, and the white liberal serves as an ambassador, translator from the white society to us. And they meet, they convene, and they discuss how they're going to perpetuate in advance white supremacy over the Negro.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you black and you don't want white supremacy advanced over you, you're going to have to learn how to not defer to them. Not. Oh, yeah, I like that. That was it there.
That was, I heard you. You said that was the shiznit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. The shit. I love it. Absolutely love it. That was the best. That was just the best thing they could ever come up with.
There's some funkadelic on with that. Now I'm with the mind.
Yeah.
Michael Hampton burning out on that. But anyway.
Moving on.
So that's the issue of the black bourgeoisie and the white liberal. Their ambassador meet to discuss how they're going to manipulate you, black folks, into following their agenda.
Why is you black folks? What's that? What is that all about?
Out to the audience. I'm just.
Oh, okay.
Not you, no.
Why as if you're not?
Why?
You know, the whole you people thing.
I didn't say you people. I'm saying you to the audience. And me, because I know it. And so.
I'm just teasing you.
Yeah. And so people, I don't like you. And I'm just saying, so when they listen to this in the playback, they like, man, he just said that shit to me. I was saying to you. But anyway, like that. You know, not second case singular, but girl.
Mm-mm, you just ain't gonna let that go, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Oh, I know it's just funny. It's a nice joke. But anyway.
Okay. Well, that was it for the night, and you done?
No.
No? Okay, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not.
You only have a few minutes left.
I know, I got like, okay.
All right.
I just got the warning like a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
9 seconds, and I'm supposed to have some time over that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Here we go. He has a quote here from Lauren Miller, who states that there are liberals and liberals ranging from left to the right, but there are certain characteristics identifiable in terms of attitudes and beliefs. Simply stated, liberalism contemplates the ultimate elimination of all racial distinctions in every phase of American life through an orderly, step-by-step process adjusted to resistance and aimed at overcoming such resistance. In the field of constitutional law, that's Obama's specialty, the classic liberal position exemplified in Supreme Court's all deliberate speed formula of school segregation cases requires and rationalizes Negro accommodation to and acquiescence in disabilities imposed because of race and in violation of the fundamental law, end quote. The liberal is one who sees both sides of the issue, because the ambassadors, as I just stated, and shies away from extremism in any form. He wants to change the heart of the racist without ceasing to be his friend. That's right, because he's an ambassador. He wants progress without conflict. Therefore, when he sees blacks engaging in civil disobedience and demanding freedom now, he is disturbed. Black people know who the enemy is. I would say some black people know who the enemy is.
Mm-hmm.
And they are forcing the liberal to take sides. But the liberal wants to be a friend that is enjoying the rights and privileges pertaining to whiteness and also work for the Negro. End quote. Now, I would add, he doesn't work for the Negro. Some people may think that the liberal works for him. No, he works for the white society. To get you to come along and to come to a more amicable, say, compliance with whatever it is that white society is doing in general, and they are trying to convince the hardcore extreme members of their own white society to meet some of those, you know, I would say you call them demands on things that, you know, black folks want.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you know what? We know we're trying to do this thing here with this global takeover stuff. what if we throw these Negroes a bone a little bit here and there, you know, maybe come on in, make things a little smoother. And then Head Hardcore was like, we don't want to give them Negroes nothing. Come on, man. We can make this happen a lot easier if we do these things.
That was in your Ruckus voice.
Yeah.
I recognize that tune.
Yeah. And so they gave in. I said, okay, we'll give these Negroes this and that. And the liberal had to tell them how much more beneficial it could be for white society if they give those concessions to the Negro. Mm-hmm. And they don't tell that to us. So that's not a selling point for us to say, hey, we're going to destroy the economy because they're going to fall deep in love with us, that they'll throw away all their businesses. That's the conversation he gives to them. And they was like, yeah, we're going to make even more money, you saying? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See. He got to sell these perks to his brethren to get them to go along with this. See. And that's the price. That's a little behind. So we think that liberal's working for us. He's only working with us.
Right.
We can get some concessions, but yet they still gain our compliance.
That's correct. That's right. They're always working for their goal.
Yeah, they work for their goal.
Their ends. They're absolutely.
Right.
If we just happen to get in there and get some crumbs, well, you know, so be it.
So be it.
Because it's much better to have us compliant and, you know, very easily pacified by so little, you know, than to have to fight all the way kicking and screaming anyway.
Right. Than to have us constantly having to put out fires all the time.
Right.
That's inefficient.
Inefficient. Correct.
They smart.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They could have done it a more inefficient way. They just chose a more efficient one.
Correct.
That's it. They running. They doing what they got to do to go where they want to go. Now, Negro, where do you want to go? You want to go with them? Because you're going kicking and screaming, or you're going with some toys. Or you could get a little bit more things that you want by your subversion.
No, we want the toy option. What was that, B?
B?
That was B. I take B at all times.
I take B.
All areas of human activity. B. The answer's B.
B. And that's the general stance of black society right there, B. Down to B. Oh, that's so funny. And, you know, I'm not going to finish this section out, really.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it on the show. I mean, I'm going to say, you go and read the book.
Okay.
I think we pretty much summed it up. And that's like another page of material here. I think it's just superfluous. I think we pretty much bust it wide open for you, and if you can't get that, which I know you can, yeah, I know we know our people understand this subject very thoroughly.
Of course, absolutely.
And
it's probably very redundant, you know, even discussing this.
Yes, it is. But we just want to put it on the table, and because I don't think, you know, we are discussing it.
Okay.
But next week, we're going to, I think, well, I forgot what the subject title is supposed to be, A Revolutionary Theology of Black Power or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's the third part, the third and last part in this particular book.
Yeah, in this particular book, we're going to do something else, but that's what we're going to discuss. That we're going to get all into that a little bit from this, what Professor Cone is discussing in this book, and we're going to hit it.
Yep.
All right, we see y'all next week. And go get this book and read it and learn something.
Bye, y'all. Good night.